If you've had enough of debates, you might be in the mood for an undebate. The Lansing State Journal's undebate is later today. This is a bar crawl style event, and it's an opportunity to talk about local issues without reference to any presidential candidate. It all gets started at the imagine such a thing. It's at the Lansing Brewing Company, but that is the first of a number of stops, including the Beer Grotto, the Nut House, Waterfront Bar and Grill, and a number of others. 5:30 till 8:30, I guess the place to be is the Lansing Brewing Company at about 5:30 if you want to participate in today's LSJ undebate. Well, the presidential campaign season has been filled with tweets and jabs and marketing issues like no other. Most marketing professionals would say both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton have had branding issues. Current State's Brooke Allen asks a Michigan marketing professor if these issues could affect voters.
I'm speaking with Professor Mike Bernacki, University of Detroit Mercy Marketing Professor. And Professor, thank you so much for being with me. How long have you been teaching?
Gosh, longer than most of my students have been going to school. 40 years.
And that being said, is it safe to say this campaign season has been full of marketing lessons for both parties?
You know, it really has. It's been marketing and counter-marketing. You know, you don't always find that. You know, you find campaigns and candidates and their surrogates offer various viewpoints. But the idea of tit-for-tat and marketing and counter-marketing is very unusual in a campaign. Most of the campaigning has been negative campaigning. And, you know, if you negative campaign, either you accept the results, you know, or on the other hand, you have to bounce back and you have to counter. And it's very difficult to do. And that doesn't make anybody happy. As a matter of fact, one of the struggling features of this campaign is to get somebody to vote so that they can do it positively, so that they want to vote. That what we find very often is folks saying, well, the reason they're going to vote is because they don't want the other person to be elected. Please, what's the story there? Well, the story is it's been a disastrous campaign season with personal brands really determining outcomes as opposed to policy, as opposed to politics, and this is very unusual.
What about the old saying, there's no such thing as bad publicity?
That sounds like words from Mr. Trump. He would certainly agree with that.
So what about the thought that, you know, everything he says is controversial and kind of free publicity? How much money has he spent on advertising and on campaigning in regards to Hillary Clinton and what she spent?
Frankly, very little. And that's why, you know, at the end of this campaign, everything else aside, he's in great difficulty. Because if you take a look at the total expenditures, she is very well bankrolled. And as a matter of fact, knows, of course, which states are battleground states, as we all do, as does Mr. Trump. But he's not able to secure, you know, the time necessary because it's already purchased. And I would say that probably, you know, in the neighborhood of 2 to 3 to 1, Mrs. Clinton is outspending Mr. Trump. And, you know, you can only do so much with the freeness of publicity. At the end of the game, it's well known and it's very well tailored that if you spend the most money, you probably are going to win, everything else aside.
So many people always talk about Trump, but are those voters actually going to go out and vote regardless of who they're talking about?
You know, the problem is there enough energy? Is there enough desire really to vote? And this kind of campaigning discourages folks from going out to vote. In my classes, we discuss this, you know, very often, as a matter of fact, and I've heard it said by a goodly number of my students that they find this campaign discouraging. And while it's their first, you know, go around and wanting to vote, that, you know, they're excited about the opportunity to vote, but are they really going to do it because they don't have anybody that they're really interested? It's not enthused and energetic. Well, I think millennials, you know, in recent data, they are much more likely to be Clinton-driven, but it doesn't make any difference if you don't vote, you know. And I'm not sure that, you know, I think Mr. Trump is in a win-win situation. Does he really want to become president? Well, I don't have any idea. I can't get inside his psyche and discover. But one thing he wants for sure is he wants to continue his celebrity status. Almost everything he's done in this campaign has been celebrity status oriented, and you know, even the bad news. But watch out, because there's signs that his brand is starting to fail in the marketplace, and that's something he really can't tolerate.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I noticed on Twitter that the New York Times reporting that LA Dodgers first baseman Adrian Gonzalez is refusing to stay with the rest of the team at the Trump properties during the playoffs.
You know, there's a lot of that going on. There's folks who have golf outings, you know, down in his properties in Florida. And they've decided not to do it, to the tune now of an $18,000 event, just so they can stick it in his face and in his nose and wherever. Understand, this has nothing to do specifically with who's coming out and saying that they were abused by Mr. Trump. Not at all. This has to do with their disgust at what's going on in the campaign before any of this even happened. And so he has to be very, very careful, because the brand damage is something that he just can't tolerate.
I'm speaking with Professor Mike Bernacki, University of Detroit Mercy Marketing Professor. So let's talk about Hillary Clinton's brand and the damage that she sustained during this campaign.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. She also has a personal brand, and that personal brand is under constant attack. And she's not in good shape, you know, at all on her personal branding. And, you know, what can she best do? I think what she can best do is try to stick, you know, to the issues of the day.
How do you think that this campaign is going to change future campaigns for future candidates, no matter who wins this election?
Yeah, I think the lesson that has been learned is that the marketing of presidential campaigns, thank you very much, is now with a capital M. And you can market yourself, you know, when you're on stage, when you're not on stage. You can market yourself through the social media. And it's, of course, so time-consuming. Does anybody have the chance, the opportunity to even govern anymore? I think, you know, we have to be very, very careful at the road that we're going down right now, because it's been action, reaction, marketing, counter-marketing, remarketing, trying to reshape somebody's message. But you know what? You can't ever go back to the good old days. So folks are going to have to be very disciplined. And I think that's, you know, marketing is good, but you have to still be disciplined in the message that you send, because eventually taxpayers, voters are going to look at it and make a determination on whether you're going to get their vote or not. And I think we have to be careful. I'm glad that the Pandora's box of marketing is open. There's nothing hidden. Everything is supposed to be transparent, or close to transparent, and it hits the media so quickly, you know, nanosecond. But at the end of the day, is the American people, are they willing to live with the results of the election, with the results of this marketing, counter-marketing scenario?
Well, thank you so much, Professor. Again, that was Professor Mike Bernacki, University of Detroit Mercy Marketing Professor. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Brooke.
And for Current State, I'm Brooke Allen.
Coming up on Current State, Detroit's iconic Motown Museum has announced a plan to raise $50 million for an ambitious expansion. What's in store at Hitsville, USA?
All of the new construction happens behind the museum, and it simply supports or enhances that experience.
We talk about Motown's big museum expansion plans with Chairwoman and CEO Robin Terry. That's later this hour on Current State. Current State on 90.5 WKAR. Welcome back. On the surface, it's an unlikely story. A woman revolutionizes the cattle industry by promoting the humane treatment of animals in slaughterhouses. She happens to be autistic. It's a storyline hard to imagine on stage. Still, the life of Temple Grandin has been turned into a musical arriving at the Wharton Center this weekend. My partner during this hour of the WKAR Fall Fundraiser, Jamie Paisley, learned more about this bovine-inclusive production. Welcome back, Jamie.
Thanks for having me, Mark. And it is bovine-inclusive. I found out, and this is not part of the segment we'll hear, that there are actually herds of kind of young actors resembling cows in the production, that they're moving in circles just as cows would do, and they took improv classes. I had to cut that from the interview proper, but, well, the name of the show coming to the Wharton Center's Payzant Theater Friday and Saturday, which we'll get into later, the name of it is simply Temple, and even though there is a saint, which is a secondary lead character, the Wharton Center's Chris Coop Ulat tells me about the heroine of this tale.
Temple is based on the life of Temple Grandin, the real-life genius who has Asperger's. She's on she has autism spectrum disorder, and she revolutionized the cattle industry through her unique vision. She was able to think like and see through the eyes of cattle and made their journey to the slaughterhouse a much more humane one. She's now a professor of animal science at Colorado State. She's a public speaker, an autism activist, published author, an amazing person. But back when she was born, autism wasn't really known. She was a late speaker, didn't speak until about the age of 3. Through her mother's love and persistence with the medical community, she finally was able to create bridges for herself to be able to communicate in the world.
And for this production of Temple, the Wharton Center has one of the co-authors here in East Lansing.
Correct. Sylvia Pato is with us on this journey. She's in the building, writing new pages, new lyrics every day. This vehicle came to us through something that we are in our third installment of a program called Imagine. And in this truly unique program, we use middle school, high school, and college students up to grad school at MSU in order to develop new works. And it had been workshopped 10 years ago while Norman Durkee, the original composer, was living. But it's greatly changed since then under the new composer to the piece, Constantine Katsopoulos, who was a world-famous conductor. And he honored Norman Durkee's and Sylvia's original vision in creating harmonies and things that didn't exist before that feel very much like a court viol piece. And so it's got an architectural feel to some of it. And some of the, you mentioned before, the temple and the religious aspects of it. We have a character named Saint Brigid, and she is the patron saint of cattle. And she is Irish, and she is played by Constantine's daughter. And she is Antonia, and beautifully done. But she's sort of the voice of Temple early on. And Temple is her physical incarnation, whereas we're seeing Saint Brigid, who is, I think, from 400-something A.D., we're seeing her as a spirit guide. And it's just a fantastic piece. It's very magical in what I don't think would normally be considered amazing musical theater material. We're talking about slaughterhouses and cattle and autism all in one. And yet, as it comes together as a piece, it's just fascinating.
Imagine is a project that the Wharton Center's Director of Marketing and Communications, Diane Wilcox, explains a bit more in detail.
Imagine itself is a collaboration between the Department of Theater and Wharton Center, bringing together all of these artists, professional artists from New York, from Broadway, from elsewhere, along with these graduate students, undergraduates, high school, and depending upon the project, sometimes middle school students, giving the students this tremendous and amazing opportunity to work with the professionals on a brand new script so that they have what is frequently an experience for professional performers, which is creating a new work and assisting in that process. So it is rather amazing to watch this happen, watch the growth in terms of being performers, but also the what they learn in terms of discipline and what they learn in terms of each day that script changes. So they have to learn new lines. They have to learn how to portray something new. And this really is a professional situation for them, this And it's a wonderful project. It's about 3 weeks long, and the professionals are in the room for about 2 weeks.
Since Imagen includes experiences for middle and high school age performers, there are lessons from Temple Grandin's real life story about the impact of bullying and empathy that can be addressed.
And not only has it been addressed, it's actually very specifically going to continue to be addressed. They did have the opportunity for one rehearsal to work with a person who is on the spectrum, who is a performer himself, and that was a wonderful experience for them to be exposed to someone directly. In addition, there'll be two performances, standard performances of Temple, one Friday night at 7:30, one Saturday night at 7:30. But also we're going to have a matinee on Saturday at 2 p.m. that is specifically for an audience of people who are on the spectrum, who have autism spectrum disorders, and or people who have some kind of sensitivity in that regard, or issues of expression. People who happen to be developmentally disabled. And this at this performance, the sound and the lights will be modulated. We'll be having support opportunities available, including activities and a quiet room if it's all just too much for people. But also the opportunity for this audience to be themselves, to if they have a need to have an electronic device as their comfort device when they experience things, they are welcome to have that iPhone or iPad in the theater itself. If they need to stand up, sit down, walk around, if they have something that comforts them or helps them to focus, such as flapping hands, that's fine. If it's someone who happens to have Tourette's, again, that's fine. We'll be expecting it. We are warm and welcoming. Everyone will be accepted. This is our opportunity to have a sensory-friendly performance at Wharton Center and offer something to the community. We're working with Mid-Michigan Autism Association, with PECM, with Aspire, with numerous organizations, as well as on MSU campus. There's a tremendous network of researchers, support services, family groups and organizations. And at the state level, we're working with the Michigan Department of Health Services. However, if you're an organization not on that list and you want to know more, call me.
In addition to the Wharton Center's Diane Wilcox involving local autism advocacy entities, Chris Koop-Ulette tells me another great opportunity that the Imagen students will get to experience after their production of Temple.
The cast will have the opportunity to meet Temple Grandin herself when she visits Lansing in November. And just the fantastic thing, how stars aligned that we are an agricultural university and a musical about this particular subject came about at the same time that the Broadway League is launching initiatives for more and more Broadway touring companies to offer sensory-friendly performances. And so at this time, we're able to workshop the piece itself and then workshop Wharton Center itself with the sensory-friendly performance. And we're very excited to offer this to a large community that we've wanted to communicate with for a long time.
The Wharton Center and Imagen's production of Temple comes to the Payson Theater Friday and Saturday at 7:30 in the evening, with the sensory-friendly production Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. For tickets and more information about Temple, visit whartoncenter.com. For Current State, I'm Jamie Paisley.
Yes, everything is all right at the Motown Museum in Detroit this week. The museum has announced a $50 million, 50,000 square foot expansion project. After the announcement, we talked with Motown Museum Chairwoman and CEO Robin Terry about the project. She tells us that it's too early to tell if construction will disrupt visits to Hitsville, USA.
We are trying to design everything in such a way that there's as little disruption as possible. But I think those things, as we refine the experience and what the actual plan is, those things will become more clear to us a little further down the road. But right now, we're trying to avoid that as much as we can.
One of the charms of visiting the museum is how authentic it feels to the peak years of the 1960s. Are you concerned about changing that dynamic?
No, only because that's what we are protecting greatly. So we want to make sure that the authentic experience that our visitors have today, that that does not change. Everything that we're doing, all of the new construction happens behind the museum, and it simply supports or enhances that experience. But that, you know, that is why people travel from all over the world to visit Hittsville, USA, because it's authentic. So we don't ever want to do anything that takes away from that. We simply want to enhance it.
We're talking with Robin Terry, chairwoman and CEO of the Motown Museum in Detroit. This week, they've announced a $50 million expansion of the Hittsville, USA facility, where all the legendary Motown music was recorded. Where will the museum get $50 million?
It's a great question, and I think you got to stay tuned. We have some wonderful partners who have already come on board, but there is still an opportunity for foundations, corporations, individuals to be involved in this, and not just locally, but nationally. We're seeing people come forward who just want to make sure this project happens. So, that, you know, the door is open for folks who want to be a part of something that's going to have tremendous impact, you know, not only here in Detroit and in this region, but across the globe, and really making this a destination point.
What does founder Berry Gordy Jr. have to say about this?
He's really excited about this. And, you know, he's at a stage in his life where he's very focused on the telling of the story and how the story will be told long after all of us are gone. And so this project in particular is near and dear to his heart.
When completed, how will tours of the museum change?
I think we'll know better once the experience, again, is more refined. The biggest difference is that people will be able to come here and spend a full day if they want to, because there will be so much that they can engage in. Just depending on their level of interest and engagement in the experience. So I think that's the biggest difference. They'll have more retail opportunity. They will have dining opportunities, the theater itself. You'll have live entertainment both during the day and at night. So there'll be so many new, interesting, fun ways that folks can engage in it. So it can certainly take up more of their time.
Tell us about Phil Freeland, the designer you're working with, and why he was chosen.
So Phil Freeland, and I will say this again also, you will learn more about Phil as this project unfolds, but he is the design architect, and most recently he was the lead architect on the new African American Museum on the Smithsonian lawn. So he is truly considered one of the best in his field. And we were drawn to him because he understood the vision that we wanted to achieve, and certainly had the background to support taking on a project like ours in a urban neighborhood environment.
Before you take the girl and say I do now, I'll make sure she's in love with you now. My mama told me you better shop around.
Robin Terry, again, chairwoman and CEO of Detroit's Motown Museum. The Raps are coming off an exciting $50 million expansion of the music mecca. Do you know how many jobs will be created by this expansion?
Those numbers are still coming forward, again, as we refine the experience. But what we're excited about is that we know that it's going to create permanent jobs. We know it's going to create construction jobs. And we know that the economic impact of the development overall is going to be positive for our local hotels, restaurants, transportation companies. Across the board, I think people will feel the boost of having this kind of cultural attraction in the heart of the city.
One issue for a long time around Hittsville, USA, has been parking. Is that a consideration in the new plans?
It's the top consideration.
Really?
It is absolutely the top consideration. We're still working out all of the solutions around it, but it's giving us an interesting opportunity to partner with some of the surrounding businesses and to also just think about how the community can collaborate and sort of make use of parking in this area overall. So it's at the top of the list.
How big an impact do you think this will have on the number of visitors you get?
Oh, my goodness. You know, today, so we see over 70,000 people a year today, and we turn a lot of people away simply because our footprint is so small. There's only so much that we can do. So I think it, without question, will have significant impact on not only the people who visit, but even the types of events that we can host. You know, on a weekly basis, we get requests for facility rentals to host for various events, and some of them we just can't accommodate. We did 3 weddings last summer. Imagine that.
Hmm.
So I'm looking forward to not only the increased traffic, but just the usage of the space by community.
We've been talking with Robin Terry, chairwoman and CEO of the Motown Museum in Detroit. This week, they've announced a $50 million expansion of the Hitsville, USA facility, where most of the legendary Motown music was recorded. Robin, thank you and good luck.
Thank you for having me, and thanks for helping to share the good news.
That's our show for today. Tomorrow on Current State, meet a Michigan high school history teacher who's way into experiential learning. For more than a decade, Darren Sylvester and his students have been unearthing an abandoned cemetery in Plymouth Township near Ann Arbor. We'll talk with Mr. Sylvester about this fascinating history assignment. Also, Taylor Taylor is our Live Music Friday guest. You've seen her play solo around Michigan. But the singer-guitarist is also playing with a band these days, Taylor Taylor and her band, from her latest EP, right here, Hear It Live, tomorrow here on Current State. Our executive producer is Peter Worf. Katie Cook directed the show today. Thanks also to Kevin Lavery, Scott Pohl, Jamie Paisley, Brooke Allen, Drew Hill, and Isaac Constance. The Current State podcast, informative, insightful, and indispensable. From politics to education, the environment to health care. That's the Current State Podcast. Catch it at iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. We hope to see you tomorrow on Live Music Friday. In the meantime, call us now with your contribution for WKAR and Current State, 517-353-5000. Have a great day. See you on Live Music Friday.